Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Access Astrology. It's Monday evening, 11 o'clock on the East Coast, and we are Access Astrology, saying hello to you, giving you an idea of what's going on in the sky and how that might play out around us, and also taking callers. So if you have a question for us, feel free to call in. We'll ask for callers in a few minutes. And we are three astrologers working together as Access Astrology. And right now we have myself, Mark Wolfe, speaking to you from Manhattan. And we have...
Ann Wortley, speaking to you from the Upper East Side at my bright red desk on a nice chilly little night in Manhattan.
And we're waiting for Heather Roan Robbins to phone in from somewhere in the wilds of North Dakota.
Yeah. She's out in the wilderness.
Right near the border there.
Right on the border of Canada. Far away. Yeah. So it's an interesting week, you know.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is.
What do you like
leading
about the week?
Leading up to a new moon. We get a new moon at 24 Libra, very end of 24 Libra. That'll be on Sunday. Right? Sunday? Yeah.
Yep, Sunday.
And a bunch of other stuff. Planets are changing signs. That's always exciting. Mm-hmm. Venus is squaring Pluto.
That's always good for a good, passionate, like, you know, love story kind of thing happening in the love life. Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then it can really bring the relationship dynamics right up into close view, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does.
Yep. And so we have Venus changing signs. That's how that square comes about. And we have Mars changing signs too, right?
Yep, Mars changed signs on Friday. Mm-hmm.
And Jupiter goes direct.
Yay! Our luck changes. Yay!
Yeah, mm-hmm. So Jupiter has gone back to 17 Aquarius, isn't it?
Where he was last March.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he's turning around now and starting to move forward again.
Yay. I have to say I love Jupiter going direct. You know, he rules my midheaven, so I always find when his stations and his retrogrades are, you know, directly affect how my business goes or how my work goes. So when he's going forward, I'm always like, yay, go Jupiter. And when he's going backwards, I'm like, okay, you know, we're working on old stuff. We're trying to get things finished. So it's definitely Jupiter stationing direct is one of my favorite aspects because he's like the big jolly red guy in the sky. So, and this time he's in my first house. He's stationing in my first house. So I'm kind of I don't want to gain any weight. That's what I'm clear about that. But I'm hoping it brings lots of new things to me because I'm starting a new 12-year cycle with Jupiter in my first house. So. And if I think back to 97, that was a really big cycle I started then. So I'm kind of looking forward to this new one. So it's like, yay.
Good.
Yeah, so I'm happy about Jupiter going forward. And for all of those of you who think back to what you were doing in March and then think about what kind of stopped moving forward in June, kind of paused then, and you've been kind of regrouping or figuring out where it is, and now it starts to move forward again. And Jupiter, you know, finishes up in Aquarius and through December. And then he goes into Pisces, where he'll spend a good chunk of next year. And he goes a little bit into Aries, and then he comes back into Pisces for the back end of next year. So it's we're at the back end of the zodiac. And so with Jupiter in Aquarius, you want to look at the houses that are ruled by Sagittarius and Pisces in your chart, because Jupiter rules those. And he's kind of vibrating in the Aquarius house, bringing the Aquarius house energy to the Sagittarius and the Pisces house the Pisces planets. But basically, Jupiter is our luck. It's our good abundance. It's forward motion. It's very cool. You know, Barack Obama, as Jupiter stationed, he got the Nobel Peace Prize. Jupiter is the peacekeeper. I mean, Zeus didn't always keep the peace, but he was supposed to. And the idea of Jupiter stopping and now shifting direction often brings really good things. People get feeling much better and a little more optimistic. So I always love Jupiter. So
cool.
That's my favorite
part
of the week. The rest of the week I can skip. I'm focusing on Tuesday. So what do you think about Mars going into Leo?
Well, I think it's nice to see Mars move out of Cancer. I always think that's a tough spot for it.
It is.
And going into Leo, it brings in a lot of fire, a lot of, very strong energy for Mars. And so we get to feel that. And, we'll notice it. Because whenever Mars is in a fire sign, it's much more active, feels much more at home.
Yeah.
Gives it something to really burn the fuel with. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's also coming in, what we want to watch for Thursday and Friday is that's the degree it's going to station at, go back to when it's stationed in, when it goes backwards in May, March rather.
Mm-hmm.
So Mars, so the story starts, the Mars retrograde story. Mars is going to be in Leo. Normally a Mars is in a sign for a couple of months. And he's going to be in Leo for 8 months. So that's a lot of fire energy. Last spring we had Venus in Aries for like 80 days. It was like a lot of fire energy in the Venus area. Now we're going to have Mars in fire, in a lot of fire energy, for 8 months. He's in there till the middle of June. So that's a lot of Leo, Mars in Leo. So when you think of Mars in Leo, what do you think of, Mark?
Well, I think of lions right away.
Mm-hmm.
and roaring lions. Because Leo lion and Mars, very active.
Yeah.
So not the lion on taking a siesta. This the lion asserting the role as king of the jungle.
Yeah.
So very much, very kingly and in a good way, it's a king behaving as a king should behave. Which is taking command and saying this is how things will be done. And there's a kind of regal air to our will when we express it through Leo.
Right.
So, there's something good about that.
Mm-hmm.
And, when the role of the king is being played well, we all enjoy it.
Right.
It's everything fits. And, applause is deserved. So, that's what I like to think of is that very positive. On the downside with Mars and Leo, though, if it's acting really out of ego, then you get a kind of elbows out to the side to push everybody out of the way as I thrust my way to the front. That's Mars and Leo. It's kind of like upstaging everybody.
Right.
That can be Mars and Leo too, and that's coming out of, no, look at me, forget everybody else, then that's not a good energy.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it has kind of a pop the energy. It's like, in the old days, they used to call it going up on your lines, where someone tramples on your line or you're delivering some big thing and they're over in the corner washing the dishes and everybody turns and watches them rather than paying attention to you. So Mars and Leo can have a little bit of a tendency to upstage people. And the Egyptian god, the Egyptian god Sekhmet was actually a lioness goddess. The imagery, if you've gone to the Metropolitan Museum or you've looked at your Egyptian imagery, she was a child of the sun god Ra, and she was the lion, the female form with a lion head. And she did have a bit of bloodlust, She kind of was like, I can kill you because I can. I'm a Leo. I'm entitled to do whatever I want to do, as opposed to doing it just to prove, to prove to themselves they could. She would do it for adulation or for praise. So it's like, look at me, I killed this. Isn't this cool? And it, as opposed to, because Mars is, of course, the hunting and the killing energy. So, but it also has a lot of desire for praise and a lot of desire for, look at me, I'm doing this really cool thing. Don't you think this is great? So we're going to have a little bit more of that energy around too, and as opposed to the Mars in Cancer, which I think has, I've been hearing a lot of people feeling depressed and not able to get out of bed or feeling kind of sad or feeling kind of you know, downtrodden, you know, and once Mars gets into Leo, we're all going to feel a little more fiery and a little more frisky, a little more lion-y, you know, like we're going to roar. But on the, you know, it's at the expense of making sure you're not roaring, you know, too much, you know, just kind of being aware of how to roar. Of course, that's a Virgo saying that to a Leo, which Leo goes, all right, who can roar too much? But it does have a little bit of a diva quality when it's behaving badly. But on a good day, it can be incredibly magnanimous and incredibly generous. It's a very generous Mars because it does gallantry. You know, it believes in fighting the righteous fight. It's the, you know, it's the quest of the knights. You know, the knight in shining armor going to defend the damsel's honor kind of thing. It's got that quality of braveness and boldness in the face of danger. It's a brave Mars, too. It's very brave.
Mm-hmm.
So people are going to feel more like getting out in the world than they have maybe the last month or so while Mars was in Cancer and everybody was going, oh, man, you know, I just want to stay home, you know. So I think that part will be good. So, and what do you think about, pardon?
I was going to say there's an interesting thing that Mars sets up before leaving Cancer. Mars sextiles Saturn, because Saturn is at the end of Virgo, getting ready to go into Leo, but not there yet. Mm-hmm. So Mars makes a sextile to Saturn, and then that's actually today, and tomorrow Venus will conjunct Saturn. So Mars brings something to Saturn that Saturn then passes to Venus tomorrow. Venus comes in and talks to Saturn. And then Venus goes on to sextile Mars and brings back whatever. It's like a little, you know, one of those whispering games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mars says something to Saturn. Saturn repeats it to Venus. And Venus says to Mars, oh, I heard you told Saturn, you know, this. And so we're having an interplay of those three energies, the will and, you know, the masculine aspect and then the feminine aspect, or our attraction for things and things that attract us, both of them dealing with Saturn, the master of reality. So they're both sort of coming to Saturn and realizing how we work with Saturn in terms of what we desire and what we bring into creation and how that forms a reality. And so the three of them are in this little conversation over this couple of days. And I think what that means is, and they're all getting ready to change signs too. So we're sort of doing a little wrap up on how we work with Mars and Venus to create the reality that we're in.
Or create the reality we want to go to.
Yep.
I've had a lot of people talking about, well, I don't really like what I'm in right now. And I'm like, well, what would you like it to be like? And they go, well, I want it to look like this or this or this. And it's like, okay, well, you know, create some space for the universe to do it and say, you know, what I'm looking for is something like this. I wonder how it can be accomplished. You know, what's the vision for the next piece? And, you know, giving it room to open and giving it room to flourish, because so often we don't take time. We're just so busy running from one part of our life to the next. We don't actually sit and say, gee, you know, I wonder how I could, and giving it that room. So I think that's also it with the conversation that they're having, because it is an important conversation, because it's also a, you know, while we've been working in this energy, Mercury, you know, has also gone and talked to them too. You know, so he's a little ahead of the guys, but he's been carrying information and stories back and forth. So it's the kind of thing where, you know, the universe is kind of talking among itself up there, or the heavens are talking among themselves, and there's a lot of crosstalk. And very often the planets don't talk to each other. They're, you know, I mean, they do when they have an aspect or something, but they can, you know, go along for a while by themselves, not chatting with each other. So when there is so much conversation in the heavens, it often is a time on Earth when we have a bit of a breakthrough in what we're thinking about, what's possible for us, because they're kind of piping up and going, well, you know, did you ever think of this? And, well, why not that? You know, I was out to dinner tonight, and at the dinner table with someone I've known for a long time, and it was two people that had never met each other, so I knew both of them. But they were asking each other questions, you know. So in there asking each other questions, I was learning new things because these were questions, you know somebody for a while, you don't remember, or you remember, but you don't really think about it, you know, kind of thing. And it was like all these fresh questions about, well, what do you do? And, you know, and kind of that energy. And it was like, and they were defining themselves in different ways than I would normally have defined them. You know, I would have said, oh, well, you're da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But they were self-defining in a different way, which I thought was really interesting. And I was kind of like, well, it was really fun to listen to kind of these new definitions go flying around the room. And mm-hmm. I think that's probably what that energy is. It's like, if you were to describe yourself to someone new, let's say you met somebody brand new who didn't know anything about you, what would you tell them about who you are? How would you define yourself? And what would you say for them to get to know the most important parts of you? And I think that's kind of what this conversation that the boys are having in the heavens is about, too. Well, and the boys in Venus. I don't want to leave her out. So.
Yeah.
So, kind of cool, actually. So I think it'll be a fun week, you know? So what do you think about that full moon, or new moon, rather?
Yeah, new moon, 24 Libra, which is... trining that little gang of three we've been watching at the end of Aquarius, Neptune, Chiron, and Jupiter, mm-hmm. with Jupiter having just gone direct, and this new moon is past the trine to that. So, you know, it's carrying forward and moving that energy toward Neptune. So we have that as part of the picture. And then these sign changes have taken place already. Mars, at that point, this will be on Sunday, the new moon, Mars will already have made its shift into Leo. Venus is already well into Libra, and Mercury is moving through Libra. So there's actually there's a lot of Libra energy in this, and then that chunk of Aquarius. So there's something very mental going on. There's a lot of thinking, a lot of thought awareness that we'll have. And then Mars brings in that fire of Leo, which is kind of nice.
Mm-hmm. The passion.
And Mars is on the way to quincunxing Pluto. And we're all checking in with Pluto all the time.
Yeah, Pluto's like ever present, because whenever anybody enters a new sign, first thing they do is go, hi, Pluto, nice to see you there in the corner.
Yeah. Right, and so now Mars is seeing Pluto from Leo.
Right.
Last year was from Cancer.
Right.
From...
and Venus, too, because she's going into a new sign. She goes into Libra this week. So she goes into Libra on Wednesday night, and then goes, and then next day she squares Pluto. So she says, oh, hi, Pluto, nice to be in your town. Nice of you to stop by and say hi, you know, and kind of everybody, you know, everybody's always very polite to Pluto, but nobody wants him at their parties, you know. Oops, lost Mark. So for those of you who want to know what that sound was, that means Mark has fallen off the phone, and he will rejoin us. We're having Mercury stuff going on here. All right, the other thing that's going on while we wait for him to return, I love our audio visuals. You know, kind of a high-class operation here, folks. People fall off the phone, and we get music. And he came back.
I'm back. Yeah.
I was explaining the music that suddenly picks up really loudly, you know, while you're waiting for someone. I wonder if we can adjust the volume of that so it's not quite so loud. Yeah, because, you know, the little ba-da-da-dum, that bing-bing music that's kind of weird comes on when you fall off the phone. Yeah, so.
Oh.
So Mark's back. It's good. See, if Heather's here, you know, one of us can fall off the phone and the rest can all keep going because there's no background music. But yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I was just saying, you know, I got to Venus squaring Pluto and you disappeared, which I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign. Watch out.
Watch out.
Watch out, because she's coming to square Pluto. I did think I said something a little disparaging about Pluto, and then all of a sudden you were gone, and I thought, oh, this isn't good.
Oh.
I'm bringing down the lightning bolts on your head rather than mine. But anyway, so we're looking at that transition that Venus makes. Now, the thing that's also really interesting is, you know, Pluto and Saturn are doing their dance, right? And Pluto is answering to Saturn because he's in Capricorn. So they're kind of in the same mode. You know, they're thinking and feeling the same way. And so they've been kind of in Virgo mode. And Mercury was in Virgo. And so Mercury was kind of fussy and critical and kind of picky. And so that's kind of why we've had this kind of fussy, critical, picky energy this last couple weeks. Now what happens is now Mercury has moved into Libra, did it last week, and Venus moves into Libra, okay, because she's been in Virgo. So even though Mercury moved into Libra, he was still talking to Virgo. When Venus moves into Libra this week, she's going to now be in charge of not only the Sun in Libra, Venus in Libra, but Mercury in Libra, and Mercury's in charge of Saturn and Pluto. So everybody should kind of start behaving a little better. There should be a little uptick in the amount of diplomacy, a little less criticism, a little less thin-skinnedness, where people are kind of feeling like, you know, you say, you know, their nose is green, and they immediately assume you're calling a greenie or something. You know, the level of sensitivity has been exceptionally high, and that's going to shift because Venus is changing signs, and she's not going to be in thin-skinned Virgo anymore. And I am a Virgo, so I can say Virgos are thin-skinned. We're very, very sensitive to criticism. So people have been highly sensitive to all kinds of criticism over this last couple of weeks, especially as Mercury had a big retrograde in Virgo. So we've been working with kind of critical emotional energy. And now when she changes signs, we should have kind of a shift on all sorts of planets' levels, because the Sun's going to change his emotions. Venus is going to change her emotions. Mercury is going to change his emotions. Saturn's going to change his, because now he's going to be answering to Libra, Venus and Libra, through Mercury. And then Pluto's going to change his, because he's going to be answering to Libra, because he answers to Saturn. And they all ultimately go back to what's called the final dispositor, which is Libra. And so it's going to make everything more pleasant. Which is what I'm really looking forward to, because the level of crankiness has been getting on my nerves a little bit lately. So I'm kind of really looking forward to that shift, because I do think it will feel like there's just everybody's lighter, a little more diplomatic, a little more like, well, let's partner instead of picking on each other. You know, let's come up with some kind of compromise. Who knows? They may even be able to get a health care bill out of the Senate. So I'm looking forward to it myself.
Okay.
Huh? Yeah. It's like I've been waiting. Like, can't we get over this criticism, people? Everything's negative, negative, negative. So it's like, let's be a little more like the world isn't ending. We're, you know, we have our health, we have our children, we have our partner, we have our love, we have our job, we have our, at least we have something. You know, we're not eating rice out of a bowl yet. You know, so I'm looking forward to the shift. So unless you want to eat rice.
I think Mars going into Leo will be a big part of that.
Yes, that adds a whole more upbeat fire passion energy to the story, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'm looking forward to it. I'm ready.
Yeah, we should give out the number for our callers.
Okay, that sounds like a plan. So our call-in number is 347-215-8881. 347-215-8881. So call in if you have any questions, or you'd like to talk to us a bit about what's coming up in the week ahead, or in your chart in the months ahead as Mars goes into Leo, where he's going to spend 8 months, so he's going to wake up all your Leo planets, and as Saturn goes into Libra at the end of the month, where he's going to wake up all your Libra planets, and as Venus goes into Libra this week to wake up all your Libra planets, and also we didn't want to leave out Ceres, who went into Scorpio today. We got to kind of start thinking about including her a bit more because she's moved up. She got a promotion last year. She's now a dwarf planet, so we can't go leaving Ceres out all the time. So if we get a caller, we'll answer it. And looks like there's one on the line, so I will try and pick it up.
Okay.
Excuse me for coughing. I'm tail end of this cough, cold thing. Hello, are you there?
Hi, I'm right here.
Hi, how are you?
Hello, Anne.
Hi.
Hello, Mark.
Hello.
Hi. You know,
hi.
I call up because I love listening to the two of you, and then you always ask me to speak to you.
Well, you don't have to talk to us, but you're the caller on the line, you know, so I can see your little number there, so I click on it.
Yeah.
Do you have a question today, or do you want to just listen quietly?
I'm so thrilled that you actually mentioned Anthony Marshall on your blog.
Yes, yes, yes. You want to talk about him?
Love to know the aspects between mother and son.
They're actually pretty nasty. I mean, I had looked at it back when the, you know, for those of you who don't know what that is I write a weekly column, and there's been a trial in New York for like the last 6 months, while Jupiter's been retrograde, basically, of the son. There was a woman who married. She's married a few times, and she married Astor, was her third husband, and she literally did say she married him for his money. He was a nasty, mean old guy, and everybody thought he would die, and he's like, I'll leave you my money if you marry me. So she did, and he did, and so she got this pot of money, and she went around giving it away. And she'd had Marshall with, I think, her first husband. And then she had a second husband who was really nasty to him. Not that I followed the trial or anything. And then she had the third husband who was Astor. And at one point, he wanted to change his name to be Astor. And she's like, no, no, you're a Marshall. Leave you a Marshall. They had a very nasty cross relationship. She didn't like him much at all. And so, basically, she lost her mind. She started having severe dementia. And he stole her money. Because she wasn't leaving it to him. She was leaving it to the hospitals and the museums and the libraries and all the foundations that she'd been giving it away to all of his adult life. So the guy's in his 80s. He's like 83 or 84, having his Uranus return. And he gets arrested for stealing his mother's estate and basically got found guilty on 14 of 16 counts. I had looked at their chart when the crime first went down to see if he'd really done it, which was like 2 or 3 years ago, and it did look like he had kind of systematically looted her based on the dates that they said. So I was pretty sure that he'd done it, but, you know, you never know if they're going to get a conviction. So what do you think about it?
All I know is that the media said that she became pregnant with this child from her first husband. He raped her.
Mm-hmm.
And because he raped her, she was not too much in fond of this son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How amazing is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's kind of a, you know, your legacy is you were a product of rape. It's kind of a harsh energy. Plus, his children turned against him, too. You know, they're the ones that turned him in.
No.
So, not a pleasant. I mean, the guy has a really hard chart, I have to say. When I looked at it, I was really, she's got a lot of Sag, if memory serves me. You know, kind of that, the Saggy Leo energy. And, he had a really, really hard chart, you know, like, you know, major depression issues, major mother doesn't love me issues. I'll go dig it up and maybe I'll do a piece on it for next week's column, because it was a really sad chart. And he, you know, the one he's with now is the third wife.
I didn't know that was his third wife until you said it.
Yeah, no, he had two before. And actually, the kids are the product of the first wife. And in the divorce settlement, the reason he's been transferring the money so much to her is the third wife, that he's, the money he stole he gave to Charlene, because he has a thing in his divorce settlement with the first wife that he has to give half of his estate to his kids, his two sons. So they are, by law, they have a divorce decree that says he's supposed to inherit them with half of the money. I'm sure he's not in the mood to do that now. But you know, that was the agreement in the divorce contract, so... Yeah, it was a hard story. But he had a really, really hard chart. You looked at that chart and you felt sorry for the guy.
Yeah. Well,
you know, not anymore, because he tortured his mother at the end. But then again, she wasn't particularly nice to him. It's got to be hard to sit in court and hear all the nasty things your mother said about you to all her friends, you know?
Yes, but she really did treat him well financially during his whole life.
Totally. She totally took care of him. Yep. But she didn't like him.
He was not hurting for certain.
No, but she didn't like him, you know, and I think that there's a thing there that, you know, the love is what we're all craving. And part of what Charlene has done, whether for good, bad, or, you know, whether she loves him for his money or not, you know, he felt really loved by this third wife, obviously, because he stole all his money from his mother for her. But, you know, there was a sense of her caring for him. So, I don't know. It's one of those very sad stories. So.
Well, I loved it that you looked at it astrologically.
Yeah. Well, you know, I look at everything astrologically. It's a very bad habit, but one that I've acquired over the past few years. First thing I do is look at the time and then look at the chart. You know, you got to live sometimes. But, you know, it's good, yeah. So did you have any other comments or questions or anything?
I can tell you that my sun is at 0.05 cap.
Okay.
So Saturn's going to square it, and so will Uranus.
Yes, you will. You'll have a little excitement there. It'll be fun.
My son is in the fourth house because I have Virgo rising. Mm-hmm. So is that a new fella?
Yeah, it could be. Mark, what do you think? Yeah.
Mark?
There's a chance of that. But it requires balancing out this Saturn and Uranus. And, you know, you're going to have to do that within yourself, so that tendency to rebel and the tendency to keep things as they are, you know, you're going to go back and forth with those. And they both square your sun. So, oh wait, your sun is in Capricorn?
Yes, 0.05.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So you have, you've had Pluto on your sun.
Oh, joy, oh, bliss.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like
and
it's been
have
fun.
You been,
yeah.
Have you been using that well? Using it well, it really helps you to focus. And it gives you a chance to work with power and sense your own power on whatever level, you know. So, you know, that's a big deal. And Pluto's going to move on now, you know.
Yeah, you're done with your Pluto transit.
Yeah, he's sliding into the first degree of Capricorn, so he's leaving zero.
Never to return again.
Oh, so sad.
Yeah, well, it'll be in a couple hundred years,
yeah.
You know.
We'll probably be reincarnated and doing a radio show again, Mark.
Yeah, right? Oh, yeah.
I remember you.
You guys are a crack-up. I hope so.
Yeah, that's fun.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I will let you help somebody else here.
I don't think anybody else is calling. We're having low caller activity. We got to get these energies moving where there's a little more fire in the sky. Well, thank you for calling and have a lovely day. Oh, wait, I just see somebody else coming in. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
All right, for those of you who'd like to call in with a quick question, the number is 347-215-8881. As they say in the things, the lines are open. 347-215-8881. And I do have a caller, so I'll pick this up. Hello, hello. Who are you?
Hello, hello.
Hi.
I send you greetings. Hi, Mark and Anne from the Midwest.
Hi from the Midwest.
Oh.
Where are you in the Midwest?
I'm in beautiful Kansas City.
Yeah, we love Kansas City.
Oh, that's nice.
Which Kansas City? There's a few of them.
Arkansas,
Missouri, Mississippi.
Montana.
Kansas City, Montana. Okay. I didn't know there was one there.
Actually, a suburb on the Kansas side.
Okay.
Overland Park.
Cool.
So, yeah. I just enjoy listening to you guys so much. I look forward to this every week, and it's a wonderful excuse to stop doing my homework and tune in. And, yes, I do have a couple of questions for you.
Okay, cool.
I'm sort of wondering, what is probably the most salient or what's most powerful in terms of, for example, eclipses at 29 degrees Cancer, you know, that past,
mm-hmm.
this past summer. I have Venus at 29 degrees.
Okay.
And then I've got my moon at 0 degrees Capricorn.
So it's getting to Pluto. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's been going on for a while. So I'm getting kind of used to that battering. And then my sun is at 3 degrees Aries.
Oh, okay.
So there's going to be a square going on there, mm-hmm. you know, pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, of all the things that are, like, beating the crap out of you, which one is the most,
to pay attention to the most?
Yeah, absolutely. And then my other little question there is, which house system do you guys use?
I use Placidus. What do you
okay.
use?
Yeah, I do too.
You do.
Yeah.
Too.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's house systems tend to be what you were raised in, you know?
Okay.
That you're raised in, you know, like kind of like the Catholic Church, or you're raised as a Jewish or Baptist or something. And so you get raised in a system, and unless there's a really good reason to convert, you tend not to.
Because, you know, when you change that house system, it tends to shuffle stuff around a little bit there. So
it does, but the angles stay the same.
Oh, good point, yeah.
The ascended and the mid-heavens stay the same. And the ICMC stay the same. The cross of matter stays the same, regardless of location. I mean, the ascendant will shift a bit, but the upper up and down part, you know, it can shift as you move up. But it's not like a lot. It's very, very close. And I kind of think of it as, you know, a lot of the house systems that were developed, and this is like one of those things I've always meant to study, but I've not gotten to yet in astrology. The house systems were kind of developed by different people at different times and different geographic locations. So like the original charts and a lot of the Indian charts, because they're near the equator, they use equal houses because it's equal because it's near the equator. And as you move up and down the globe, different charts are better. And Placidus is kind of a European chart.
Uh-huh.
And Koch, you know, the one, it's kind of more northern hemisphere. So I know people who actually say because of living in New York, we should use Koch because it's a little more high, you know, because we're higher on the earth than the middle part. So it's one of those things. And then there's other ones that are really just designed for, you know, for different kinds of predictive techniques. You know, and literally in the Indian system, there's hundreds of different kinds of, you know, zodiac systems or, you know, ephemerises you can use. So it's one of those areas that is kind of controversial, except I always kind of think of it as it's the religion you were raised in, so you kind of think that way, but that the heaven, the information is displayed such that, you know, the chart's going to show you something two or three times, so you're not going to miss it regardless.
I see.
You know?
Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. You know, unless you're a really bad astrologer, it's going to show you an aspect or a behavior or an event in a couple of different ways. So you're going to see it. You know, I can remember one time I was reading for a Scorpio, and I said, oh, it looks like you're, you know, you're getting a promotion. She's like, no. I'm like, okay. You know, so then I got a little further. I said, oh, and here it says you're getting a promotion too. She's like, no. And I got a little further, and I said, well, you know, it's showing here you're getting a promotion too. It should have happened like last week. And she goes, all right, I got a promotion last week. And
wow.
I kind of looked at her, and I went, what? She goes, I did get a promotion last week. I said, okay. I said, so, like, why did you tell me you didn't? She goes, I was testing you. And I'm like,
oh, boy.
You were testing me? Oh, okay, cool.
Thanks.
Well, you know, I'll just tell you what I see. You tell me. You don't tell me I'm wrong. Just go, uh-huh, all right? Don't say no. Because it was like it had just happened, you know, and it was like.
Right.
And so I kind of was like, don't joke and tell me I'm wrong. At least just grunt, you know. I'm a Virgo. I go, no, really? It's here, too, you know, and then it's here. Really, you didn't get a promotion last week? All right, I got a promotion. I didn't get a raise, though, you know. And it was kind of like one of those, oh, okay. Because the chart will show it to you like three or four times.
Times, right.
And, you know, in that case, it, you know, it outed a lying Scorpio, you know. So I was like, you know. A Scorpio with a secret. I was
there
testing
you.
I'm like, okay, cool. That works for me.
Yeah.
So, Mark, what do you think about house systems?
Well, you know, I do use the Placidus system,
mm-hmm.
although for charts that are way, way far north where Placidus gets really wacky, I go to an equal house system just because it's easier. But overall, I always pay close attention to the degree of the ascendant and the midheaven because, you know, we calculate those the same in all the house systems. But the intermediate house cusps, I leave a lot of leeway. I don't insist that, you know, if it says, well, your second house is 12 Capricorn, you know, I don't say, well, that's where it is. You know, I say, well, somewhere, you know, in that early part of Capricorn, that's where, you know, early to mid Capricorn, that's your second house. And I like to think of it, the analogy I use, you know what a palapa hut is? Just that.
A what?
Sort of lower,
a what?
Palapa hut? Hut made of straw roof.
Oh, okay.
And, with open sides, so you just have some posts and then a straw roof. Right? And I always think of those intermediate house cusps as being like one of those open-sided palapads. And you say, well, when am I in the house and when am I out of the house? Well, when there's really no wall, there's just sort of the shade is sort of there or it isn't there, or, you know, the rain is sort of blowing in or not, you know, it's not blowing in at all. Right?
So you're sort of standing, yeah.
Where exactly is that? Where exactly, you know, can you say you're in the house and we're out? And that's how I look at those intermediate house cusps, mm-hmm. that they're
okay.
not, you know, really finely defined.
Right.
And that's okay with
okay.
me. You know, and I think a lot of those issues sort of one fades into the next anyway.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, because sometimes
who you are,
yeah.
Yeah. Well,
who you are and how you act in the world begins to fade off into what you can call yours and how you bring it to you, mm-hmm. right? So first to second. And, you know, exactly where one activity leaves off and another one begins, it's all a little fuzzy.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. Cause,
well, and also
you know,
the sky is so big, you know, when you look up, like, you know, you point up, well, there's the line, you know. It's like, where's the line? I don't see a line up there.
Where's the line, yeah.
No line, you know. So, and what
you know,
about?
Right. Yeah, whereas the mid-heaven, you look straight up and you say, well, that's the mid-heaven.
Yes,
we can all agree straight up is straight up,
mm-hmm.
but exactly where you divide the next piece of that quadrant, you know, that's a little hard to know.
Yeah, because you know, with the discussion of the eclipses, you know, particularly the one this past summer or whenever that was, 29 degrees Cancer. That,
mm-hmm.
depending on the house system, that fell in my first house.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, looking at some other things, some folks use equal house, what have you, and that moves Saturn in my natal chart either to the 8th or 9th. So, again, you know, you're right, the aspects stay the same. But I don't know if it's more important with something like eclipses, because they talk about them, you know, the delineation of which houses did they fall in.
Well, it is, because, it wakes up the energy of the house. But where did you notice the events for that eclipse happening?
Sorry to say, I think I'm pretty numb at this point with everything that's gone on.
With all the other stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not sure I could tell you, quite honestly.
Now that's a true Pluto and your moon kind of answer, you know?
Yeah, Pluto moon, yeah.
Mm-hmm. My moon,
you know,
is so numb, I don't quite know where it happened. Thank you very much, yeah.
I don't know.
I think it happened. I'm not even 100%
sure. I think it
happened,
yeah. I think I was there. But, yeah, I mean, it's been intense with the, you know, illness of a parent. But that started a year ago. That started in 2008. And so I would have to say that the whole moon-Pluto thing is getting better.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm getting the last hit of that Pluto right here at the moment. And then hopefully Pluto will just mosey on down the road and
we'll bother somebody else.
Yeah, well, then it'll square my sun, I think.
Yep.
So, you know, what would you say is worse, Pluto on your moon or
moon.
Pluto square your sun?
Pluto on the moon.
Okay, well, that's good.
My
That'll
feeling with the moon is, because it's so personal and it's so primal and it doesn't have words, that the moon, Pluto to moon transits to me seem to be the one that people have the most responses to or the most visceral reactions to, because it's a foundation that's getting wiped out, or it's an emotional structure that's being taken away and rebuilt.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the ego structure of the sun, especially in this case, is going to be a square. You're going to see it coming and you're going to say, ah, there's Pluto. And you're going to be able to, because it's also a psychological square to your sun, it's going to say to you, okay, well, go back to when Pluto has aspected your sun on other occasions and do some psychological work and balance it out, as opposed to, you know, just kind of beating you up, which I think when it joins to your moon, you know, it's an ending cycle of a 248 years, you know, which we're only alive 80 or whatever. So you're filling not just your own stuff, but you're filling out family karma and releasing on a very profound level multiple layers of things when that cycle happens with Pluto to the moon. And generally the moon, because it has so few words and it is such a deep part of us, I think Pluto to that part of the chart tends to be a more highly charged experience than, say, Pluto to the sun. Because the sun is, you know, your ego. You can you know, take a licking and keep on ticking kind of thing, but to feel a watch phrase. But when
good point.
Yeah.
I would see it. I would definitely agree with that personally, that the moon is definitely, boy, that's been like a pow with the, you know, like in the grifters, that repeated beating with the bag of oranges sort of thing. The bruises may not show overtly, but they're sure there.
Right.
But hey, you know, we came through it. Mom's still here. So now, you know, it's just sort of the rest of everything else. Structures and things, all of it being reevaluated. It's really fascinating. You know, you read this stuff and you intellectualize it, but then to actually have it, I don't know how to describe it, on a more personal, emotional level is pretty profound and kind of cool to experience in a sick sort of way.
Well, it's the stuff that makes you realize you're really alive. You know,
absolutely.
I can remember a friend of mine's brother dropped dead of a sudden aortic aneurysm just as his career was starting to take off. And I was very anxious about seeing the sister, who is a good, you know, who happens to be a good friend of mine. And I had expressed the nervousness to another mutual friend, you know, her roommate from college. I was her roommate in New York. And Rita looked at me and she said, "But Ann, this is the time that friends are for. This is our great opportunity to show her we're her friend." And I kind of went, wow, you know.
Yeah.
I never thought. I was worried about my adequacy to be able to say something to her about her brother dropping dead of an aneurysm that was undiagnosed. And Rita was like, "No, but this is our moment to be her friend." And I'm like, you know, you're right. You know, this, when you have these experiences where you go through these profound transformations, you really realize just how important the people in your life are to you, and you really find out who are the people that are with you during the hard times.
Right, no matter what.
Yeah. And I remember that always, you know, so it's kind of like one of those, you know, this, you're right, that was our opportunity to show her we were her friends. And, you know, and it bucked me right up, and I put my shoulders back, and I said, "All right, I'm ready to go," you know. And then I was like, "What am I doing? I have no idea what to say." But it was like, all right, it doesn't matter. It's not important to say anything.
Right.
Just give her a hug and shut up, you know.
And I think that is the thing that you realize is that, you know, it once you get over that fear, it doesn't really matter what you say. It's the fact that you're there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, the most important thing. Do you think that all of this stuff going on right now, I mean, I have never seen so many people in such turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, I mean, certainly our country with everything that's going on with healthcare reform and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but even everybody on a personal level and so many people going through financial difficulties is really, you know, profound, the way things are being shaken up. And I always think back, Ann, to your talking about, you know, work your Saturn, do your Saturn.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, do you think this shakeup stuff here is the Pluto stuff, Pluto moving into Capricorn? Do you think it's more the Saturn-Uranus opposition or the interplay of all of it?
Well, I think it's the interplay of all of it.
Being different aspects, yeah.
Yeah, you want to handle that one, Mark, and then I'll pipe in because I was talking a
lot.
I tend to run out of the mouth. Huh? Yeah.
Right. Pluto in Capricorn is operating in a lot of ways on a more systematic level, and you know, at the level of system. And so we're looking at our financial system and our economic system, and the political system and how they, you know, intermesh. And we have this thing called capitalism. That's the system we're living under. And Pluto in Capricorn is saying, well, if that's what you're under, let's have a look at it. And we're seeing how power is used in our economic system. And that's what's caused a lot of the financial unraveling that we're seeing. But then that gets played out, I think, on a little more personal level through the Saturn-Uranus opposition. We have, like, I see Pluto in Capricorn as being sort of faceless. It's really about the system. Mm-hmm. And by the time you get to Saturn Uranus, we get voices that represent Saturn, voices that represent Uranus, and they're yelling at each other, you know. So
right,
we really
right.
get based on those. And you can, personal. You know, yeah, yeah. And, well, like, currently, I think a lot of the Republican political figures are playing the role of Saturn, and a lot of the Democrats are playing the role of Uranus, and they're yelling back and forth at each other. But they're real faces and voices involved. So it's more personal in that sense. And then also in our own lives, we're affected by the systematic shakeup that's going on with Pluto and Capricorn, but we have to figure out in our lives, how are we going to balance the reality structure that we're in and the responsibilities we have with our need to change and be different and try something new and be more intuitive. And, you know, each of us is having to find some way to balance. But that's,
definitely.
You know, on a more personal level. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. When do you see it settling down at any time? I mean, is it ever going to settle down?
Well,
again?
You won't see Saturn Uranus are going to continue this opposition until next July.
Yeah.
So that goes on. And then Pluto and Capricorn, we've got 16 years of that. So
and, yeah.
It's a deal, you know.
And Saturn and Pluto are squaring each other until August. And then Uranus and Pluto have a square for, they have seven that doesn't start until next summer. So
wow.
I think it's going to be systemic, you know. And
uh-huh.
the reason that doing your Saturn is important in this process is to say, well, the stability and the place that Saturn isn't going to get is the part of me that is my Saturn because he's in that sign. So kind of like when you're in a, you know, when you're doing the, you know, remember back in computers when they first happened and you would try and remove a directory? And it
yeah.
would say, I can't remove the directory. And it would be what, you know, people would call and they go, you know, I'm trying to remove the directory and I can't. And I said, well, where are you standing? And they're like, well, I'm standing in the directory. And I'm like, well, you have to get out of the directory and then delete it because you can't delete where you're standing. And they're like, well, why not? I said, well, then where would you be? And they're like, right, good point. Where would I be? If I delete myself where I'm standing, where would I be in the computer? So it's that kind of logic because Saturn is in, Pluto is in Capricorn. So that's where Pluto is going to be standing. So if you're doing your Saturn, you're standing right next to Pluto looking at the problem.
Ah.
You're not
okay.
getting attacked by him. And I think a lot of the structural stuff that's falling away for people is stuff that they've built up that they thought was their structure, because Pluto's
right.
going after anything that's not a real, true structure. And he's saying, let's shake it up and see what it really is. Let's see what's underlying that story there. You say capitalism is so great. Let's go see how capitalism works. Let me shake it a little. And everybody goes, oh, no, don't shake it. It's too big to fail. It's like that's just calling Pluto out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't do that with Pluto. You don't say it's too big to fail because Pluto goes, oh, yeah? Come on, baby, let me
yeah,
show you
watch
how
me.
I can make it. Watch me. So I think that's why doing the Saturn is so important, because when you're doing your Saturn, you're standing next to Pluto and you're working with him because
mm-hmm.
you're structurally doing the work that you're here to do anyway.
Right.
And so by cooperating with him in the sense of you're helping, you're doing your Saturn and he's evaluating Saturn, it's like you're undergoing a financial audit. But it's okay because you're showing him what you've done and he's like, okay, well, you didn't do that right. And you go, okay, well, Pluto, what would you like me to do to fix it? You know? It's more of a cooperating rather than arguing with him.
Right.
And I do think that a lot of the problem is the stuff that's getting stripped away. We thought that was what we were supposed to have, or that was somehow how we were to be measured. And Capricorn says, no, it's the most important thing that needs to be measured. It's not the stuff, the wrappings. It's the most useful thing, the most practical thing, the thing that's going to be of the greater service. So I think that's also a part of it. And a lot of times people do define themselves by what they do, or, you know, that's their definition,
sure.
as opposed to why they're really here.
Here,
and
right.
Pluto is saying, no, why are you really here? You know, what's your purpose? And your purpose is to do your Saturn. So if you're doing it, you go, oh, well, my purpose here is to do my Saturn. So I'm doing it. Pluto taps you on the head and he goes and bothers somebody else.
So generationally, if, you know, there's a whole gang of us that are born with Saturn in Pisces.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, are we pretty much all the same in terms of how we need to be doing our Saturn? Or is it, you know, again, based on house placement or the aspects that, that Saturn's making to the other planets in the natal chart?
It's kind of, I would say, a combination of both, all of those. It's natal placement. It's the aspects that Saturn makes, and then the, any aspects that go with it. So you would look at all of them, because everybody born in a 2.5-year period is going to have the same Saturn.
Right.
But
right.
How they deploy it, where that Saturn in Pisces wants to be used or, mm-hmm. you know, show up in the world is going to vary by person to person based on what aspects the planets are having to Saturn and where Saturn lives by house. You know, what area of the world he wants to show up in.
Fascinating that this whole healthcare thing is going on. I mean, particularly, at least, you know, to me, having going into a healthcare related field and, you know, having taken care of a lot of sick people over many years and seen a lot of people with no insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having Saturn and Pisces, it's like, you know, this has been a long time coming, and it's hard for me to understand why somebody would not want healthcare reform. I still don't understand why somebody would not want everybody to have access to healthcare.
But Grasshopper, you're a Pisces. You think that we all should have things and share things.
Damn socialist.
You're a damn socialist. You've evolved fast capitalism into the Piscean realm that says, you know, we're all in this boat. Therefore, but one paycheck am I uninsured, you know?
But, yeah. You know, basically, you know, from that Capricorn standpoint, though, what is going to cost you is going to end up costing me.
Yes.
So on a pragmatic level, financially, it just doesn't even, that doesn't even, their arguments don't even hold water there.
Right. Well, I know, but then nobody's going around and saying, how come they're making all this money? Let's talk about the profit motive, because we don't challenge the profit motive in a capitalist society.
You right.
Big white elephant in the corner.
Well, and you talk about the use of power.
Oops, I think we lost Mark.
All right.
I think he fell off the phone.
It's lounge time.
The lounge music is going, you know? It's like, okay. I love that. It's amazing, you know, because we're on a conference. We, you know, we do this. Say, if Heather was still here, we would not have this music. So, but yeah, it's the lounge music feature of the show. Hi, Mark, you're back. So pipe in for a last. We have got 2 minutes left, and pipe in on what you think about healthcare and why Capricorn versus Pisces.
Right.
You know, Mark, one of many excellent points about the use of power, and I was thinking about that with the abuse of power.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, use and abuse. And we get to see where is it use, where is it abuse. And, you know, it all shows up with Pluto and Capricorn. So we're looking at that. It's really right up front. And we get to see what power is on a deeper level. When Pluto moves through Capricorn, because Pluto shows us the power, and Capricorn shows how it structures things for us, and how we fit together a system, and put authorities in place to run it, and then how do those authorities handle power, how does power keep them in authority and all that, and whatever your system is, you're looking at that. So we're looking at it in terms of capitalism. But people who have a socialist system are looking at it too. And, you know, they're seeing something different. And, you know, but all of us have the opportunity then to dig down deep, see what's at the foundation of it, and decide, do we want to change it? And if so, how?
Yeah.
And, you know, so all of that is going on. But as we get these squares from Saturn to Pluto and then Uranus to Pluto, that really ups the ante, you know. So
yeah.
Pluto's there still digging around, but then you get these squares from those planets, and it really forces the issue. So whatever we've been seeing, we see the need to really change. And we are about out of time.
Yes, we are. We're very.
So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You
You're
guys
welcome.
Have a great week.
Great questions.
Thanks for you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. And we will sign off with Access Astrology. We're missing Heather Roan Robbins this evening, so we'll catch up with her soon. And this is Mark Wolfs in New York and...
Anne Ortley in New York, my bright red desk on the Upper East Side.
And you can always look up information on us on our astronyc.com website. That's astronyc.com. And tune in to Blog Talk Radio.
Access Astrology.
On live Monday night, and you can catch it anytime during the week on Archive.
On our podcast.
Access Astrology. Yep.
Okay, cool. And if you're shy and you don't want to call into the show, because a couple of you have said, oh, I'm shy and I don't want to call in, you can write to us, send your questions, we'll read them on the air.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, write to us. We're easy, we're nice, we're friendly, we answer questions. You just don't get to ask follow-up.
Yes.
You didn't call in.
Well, you wait a week.
Right.
Yeah, but that is a nice way. You can just shoot us an email and, you know, spell it out. And if it has to do with you personally, give us your chart information.
Mm-hmm.
We'll look at your chart.
We'll look at your chart. Cool. Because our job is to make astrology accessible to the world and to help you understand how to navigate the weeks ahead.
Okay.
So, all right. Bye.
Very good. Bye-bye.
Bye.